Lando slowed the Lady Luck at the edge of the asteroid belt that housed Smuggler's Run. If he went any farther, he would be within scanning range. His burst of heroism suddenly seemed like an exercise in stupidity. He reminded himself that all he had to do was find Han, warn him, and get out. The first two might not be difficult. The third would. He sat back in the pilot's chair, strapped himself in, and aimed the Lady Luck at Smuggler's Run. He burned the engines high, giving the ship tremendous speed. As it headed toward the run, he bent under his console, took his all-purpose laser wrench, and removed the panel. He pulled three chips, pocketed them, and watched as the power to all the ship's vital areas failed. The Lady Luck was disabled and hurtling toward the run. He punched the communications console and sent the run a copy of the lady's legitimate cargo manifold, a smuggler's equivalent of Mayday. They took the Millennium Falcon to Skip 5. Selass had come to Han's quarters, or rather his hole in the wall, the night before. He had essentially confirmed Jarl's story of danger, but he added some details. Most of the folks on Smuggler's Run were selling junked-out Imperial equipment at outrageous prices. Some were dying because they had spoken out against it. Han still didn't know how that tied into the bombing on Coruscant, but he knew it did somehow. Han had decided that he needed to see this outrageous operation for himself. Something felt wrong. Smugglers always moved valuable product. Now they were getting paid 10 times more than usual for junk any resourceful crime lord could find on dozens of worlds. When Han had been a regular at the run, Skip 5 had been abandoned. The caves there, while huge, were lined with sunstone, and the ambient temperature inside was about 40 degrees Celsius, unbearable for humans most of the time, deadly for many of the larger species that inhabited the run. The landing pad at the edge of Skip 5 was large enough for 6 luxury liners to rest comfortably. The Falcon looked small next to the dozens of freighters that waited, their cargo doors open, for the binary load lifters to finish placing boxes inside. Some of the boxes were as large as the Falcon's cockpit. Han glanced at Chewie, who moaned in astonishment. Selass, who had been sitting behind them, chittered excitedly. Boxes could carry anything, Selass, Han said. I want to see what's inside. You two stay here, Han said to Chewie. I'll be back. We've been through this. I'm not going to leave the Falcon unguarded here, and I'm not going into the skip alone with Selass. The heat was so intense it felt as if he'd hit a wall. Sweat broke out all over his body, plastering down his clothes. He slipped through into a narrow corridor. The sunstone walls here were sealed with a coolant cover, and the temperature dropped several degrees. He took a moment to breathe deeply. He also checked his blaster, uncertain how well it would work in the heat.
Can I use that?
Han looked up. A slender human with long golden curls sat on a desk built into the wall. He wore mesh pants and no shirt. His chest was covered with tattoos. Just making sure it worked in case I needed it.
Are your ship outside?
Yeah. Han kept his tone neutral. He wasn't sure yet if the man was friend or foe. The man lifted a blaster of his own and rested it sideways on his knee.
What's your business here?
A friend sent me here to inspect the cargo. He hired my ship to take his stuff off the run.
Your friend got a name?
Han lowered his blaster into position. Selass. He's a Sulistan whose partner disappeared on him with their ship.
Heard about that.
The man still hadn't moved his blaster, but he hadn't moved his finger near the trigger either.
Been happening a lot lately.
Smugglers disappearing?
Not coming back.
The man shrugged.
Guess they make their killing and get out of the business.
I thought there was no out of this business. What are you doing here? I've never seen guards on Skip 5 before. Of course, he'd never been on Skip 5 before, but the man didn't know that.
Never said I was a guard.
The man slid off the desk.
Just thought maybe your ship was too close to mine. Wanted to see what you were about before I loaded up.
Which ship is yours? Han asked.
The one you're parked beneath.
Han glanced over his shoulder. The Falcon had slipped right under the rear hold of a freighter that dwarfed the other ships with its square armored build. How'd you get that thing into the run?
I didn't.
The man's tone didn't invite any more questions. Han didn't need to ask any. Jarl was right. The run was a different place these days. In the past, no smuggler would steal another's vessel. Now it seemed that was something to brag about.
So,
Han said, you gonna let me through here or not? The man shrugged.
I never tried to stop you.
Han growled, you did a good imitation of it. He slipped into the sloping corridor. Below, he heard the sound of large equipment and the titter of voices speaking a language he hadn't heard in a long time. Then the stench drifted up to him. Grease, oils, cleaning solvent, and something foul, like a Gondar pit. Jawas. But it couldn't be. Jawas remained on Tatooine. The only Jawas he'd heard of leaving were the ones Luke had encountered on the Eye of Palpatine, and those hadn't left by choice. Maybe these hadn't either. The corridor opened into a large cavern. Its ceiling was several stories high enough for the sunstone to mimic the sun, and all the walls from the second story down were coolant covered. Parked in the middle was a sand crawler. Its wedge-shaped doors were open, and Jawas moved in and out. Their eyes glowed red from beneath their hoods. Their robes were tattered on the bottom, and they kept a continual conversation going as they loaded pieces of stormtrooper uniforms onto the sandcrawler. Jawas inside were cleaning the uniforms, and others were repairing droids. Buried in the sand were more pieces of uniforms, some blasters, and parts to an Imperial shuttle.
Taliba! Taliba!
After a few moments, a Jawa raised a small hand, gave an order, and the Jawas carried the remaining uniforms on board. The crawler moved forward on its giant treads. After the Jawas were gone, Han crept forward. He dug through the sand, uncovering more pieces of equipment, until below he found more coolant covers. The sand was placed here on purpose. And so apparently was the equipment. It made no sense. If Skip 5 was as big as Skip 1, the Jawas could drive through the caverns for days without seeing each other. They could almost imagine they were on a small, isolated section of Tatooine. And as long as they had equipment to find and repair, they would be happy. As long as they had a place to trade it. Jawas loved to barter, but they never took many credits. It was the act of scavenging and reselling that made their lives worthwhile. What a great way to get equipment cleaned and repaired at almost no cost. Whoever was behind this operation was brilliant. Han wiped his hands on his pants and turned. Chewbacca was standing behind him, back to Han. Bowcaster aimed up the corridor. I thought I told you to stay at the Falcon. Chewie had seen three men follow Han down the corridor. And he had seen something else. Most of the ships on the loading bay weren't loading, they were unloading. No one unloaded on the run. It was an unwritten rule. It was also unwise. Chewie moaned and wiped a paw over his nose. You're going to have to stop complaining about the stench, Fuzzball. Between the heat and the Jawas...
Between the heat and the Jawas what, General Solo?
The voice came from behind him. Han whirled blaster out. Six glottal fibs towered behind him, their big feet buried in the sand. Their eyes rested like tiny beetles over their long snouts. They had long tails and small hands that were designed to float in front of them in the water. That was their native environment. Five of them held swamp stunners on Chewie, the snub-nosed weapons covered with mud and dried algae.
You should lower your blaster, General Solo,
said the one unarmed glottal fib. Smoke curled out of his snout as he spoke.
My name is Isner. I work for Nandreessen. He's heard that the concubine of the great Princess Leia is on the run, and he would like to meet you.
Then maybe Nandreessen should come to me. I have rooms in Skip 1. Han backed up slowly. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have business to finish.
Not so quickly, General Solo. No business is as important as ours.
The sand crawler entered the cavern. The glottal fib turned toward it, surprised. Han pushed against Chewie. Run! They started up the slope. Blue light from the swamp stunners hit the sunstone walls and radiated heat.
This way!
Todd glanced up, one of the cooled covers had been pulled back. The long-haired blonde man from the entry was peering out of it. Go, Chewie, go! Han shoved Chewie into the open coolant cover, then crawled in after him, landing in a pile of fragrant Wookiee fur. They were in a narrow crevice, lined with sunstone and extremely bright. The man reached around Han and pulled the coolant cover closed. Han turned to him.
What do you get out of helping me?
Satisfaction, General. Now, come on.
The man slipped through another narrow opening, then ran down a wider hall before Han had a chance to answer. The man knew who Han was. That made Han decidedly uneasy. He and Chewie followed the footsteps, weapons out. Cool air was flowing in from another passage. The man was waiting for them. He was sitting on a pile of unused coolant covers, his blaster on his knee.
Thought you weren't gonna make it.
Han eyed him warily.
Sometimes the enemy we know is less dangerous than the one we don't.
The man held out his hand.
Name's Davis. These passages will take us to a side entrance on the landing pad where your ship is.
Han snorted.
And where Nandreessen's men wait. They know I'll be back for the Falcon.
He let his blaster drop.
Tell me what the Jawas are doing here.
Now? Davis asked.
Now.
The blonde man sighed, then he holstered his blaster as well.
A bunch of the smugglers brought the Jawas in to clean and repair equipment.
So they leave their equipment in the sand and let the Jawas pick it up, fix it, and sell it back to them?
It works, Davis said.
Yeah, it depends on your definition of what works. Jawas never repair things very well.
But they do sort the working equipment from the useless stuff, and even that is valuable to the folks around here.
So, who's buying this junk?
Don't know. And it doesn't pay to ask.
Davis glanced over his shoulder.
I really don't think we should stay here much longer. They've probably killed your Celestine friend by now and are searching the corridors for you.
Han nodded.
It might work.
What?
Davis asked. He clearly didn't understand Wookiee. For some reason, that relieved Han.
These tunnels open onto the sand, don't they?
Davis nodded. Han smiled.
Great. It's been a long time since I've done business with a Jawa.
Luke landed the X-Wing on a wide metallic strip on the northern face of Teltin, the moon on which Drakkus was living, according to his mother. Metal domes on a barren, sandblasted landscape surrounded him. The landing strip moved forward, conveyor belt style, inching toward a nearby dome. One side of the dome rose. The runway pulled the X-Wing into the building, and the door closed. A bank of glow panels lit on the ceiling, and a hissing told him that the atmosphere had changed. He checked his monitors. The air was breathable now. He pushed up the canopy of the X-Wing and levered himself out. Then he stepped through a door and into the next room. Thousands of golden hands hung from the ceiling. More lay on conveyor belts. Unattached fingers lay beside the conveyor belts, and golden arm sockets awaited attachment to golden shoulders. At first, Luke missed the whole functional golden droid approaching him.
Jedi Skywalker, you are to come with me.
Luke nodded. He clasped his hands behind his back and followed the droid past stalled conveyor belts.
What is this place?
This is the protocol hand and arm testing facility. We're working on new hands with greater fingertip sensitivity and knuckle flexibility.
The droid led Luke into a room filled with golden legs. Luke ducked beneath a pair hanging from the ceiling.
How big is this place?
The plant encompasses the entire moon, Jedi Skywalker. We make every type of droid.
Another door opened into a room full of heads, stacked one on top of the other. Their mouths were partly open, as if they were trying to speak. As Luke passed a shelf of eyes, they all flickered on. At the end of the room, the droid opened yet another door. Brakkus stood between two conveyor belts. He wore a silver uniform and matching boots. A silver lightsaber hung from his waist. Leia had once called Brakkus, with his piercing blue eyes and perfectly straight nose, one of the most handsome men she had ever seen.
Master Skywalker?
Brakkus's tone held no respect.
Brakkus.
Luke let the calmness of the Force flow through him. You never completed your training.
You didn't come all this way to discuss that.
Luke clasped his hands behind his back. Two tragedies have happened recently. In the first, millions died. The second was a bombing on Coruscant that killed a number of senators. In both cases, I sensed your presence. I need to know why.
Brackish shook his head.
I live here now. I have legitimate work, and I make good money running this facility. I no longer work for the Empire.
I never said the Empire was involved with those events. I'm not even sure what happened in the first instance. I thought perhaps you could help me. Brackus narrowed his eyes.
Why should I help you?
Because there's still a spark of good in you, Brackus, buried beneath all that the Empire taught you. In the end, Darth Vader returned to the light, so could you. Brackus's chin trembled. For a moment, Luke could see the young Brackus, the one buried deep beneath years of dark side training, the one Luke had nearly reached on Yavin. He extended his hand.
Come to Yavin with me. I'll help you.
Then Brackus shook his head as if he were emerging from a deep sleep.
It's too late for me.
It's never too late. Brackus smiled, a wistful look.
I was paid to get a message to you. That's why you've been following my trail. You're supposed to go to Almania. The answers you want are there. If I were you, Master Skywalker, I'd go back to Yavin 4. Turn into Obi-Wan and retire. Leave the fighting to those who are ruthless. They'll win anyway.
Then he turned and walked out of the room. The Jawas gave Han, Chewie, and Davis 3 blasters and 1 used speeder bike in trade for a handful of credits. The speeder bike hovered well, but it was sluggish on low. It barely fit into the corridor leading back to the Falcon. The main corridor was dark. The door to the bay was closed. The glottal fibs had to be waiting on the other side. Han glanced at Chewie.
Give me a moment to scatter, Chewie. Then go out firing.
Chewie nodded and put a paw on the door. Han gripped the speeder bike's handles and revved it to low.
Now, Chewie.
Chewie pulled the door open, and Han turned the speeder bike on high. The bike shot through the door twice as fast as he expected. A large wall loomed in front of him, and he realized it was Davis's freighter. He pulled up and circled as high as the speeder bike would let him. Over the roar of the engine, he heard shouting. The glottal fibs surrounded the Falcon. He dove the speeder down toward them, blaster in one hand, controls in the other, firing as he went. One glottal fib shot a mouthful of fire at him. And Han twirled the bike. Ground, ship, sky. Ground, ship, sky. And suddenly he was heading toward the glottal fib again. The fib had to leap out of his way. Another fib fired a blaster. And Han fired back, hitting him in the mouth. Han headed back toward the Falcon, flying under wedge-shaped freighter edges and beneath open cargo doors. Smugglers were firing at him now, and many more were shouting that he was crazy. The speeder was sputtering beneath him, but he was able to dodge. The glottal fib still surrounded the Falcon, but they were all facing him now, breathing fire at him and shooting blasters. First one, then another glottal fib fell forward with bolts from Chewie's bowcaster in their backs. Davis snuck up behind the glottal fib near the Falcon's secured door, tapped him on the shoulder,
"Hello,"
and blasted him in the mouth when he turned around. A shot from behind spun the speeder bike. Han fought for control, slamming the engine with the flat of his hand.
Come on, you bucket of bolts.
The speeder coughed again and flew above the doors, narrowly missing the rock walls. He whipped it around and saw another fib dead at Davis's feet. Other smugglers were still shooting at him. Chewie was shouting that they should all board the Falcon. Han aimed the bike toward the Falcon's cargo bay door when its engine coughed a third time. It sputtered once and died. Han flew off the speeder, unable to stop his own momentum. The metal ground loomed. He tucked as best he could, then landed, scraping his body on the metal. Davis pulled him to his feet.
You okay, buddy?
Han nodded. The speeder hovered above him. Then a blaster bolt hit its engine and the speeder exploded. Flaming parts shot everywhere.
Chewie brought the ramp down and waved them in. They ran up the ramp, and Han bolted for the cockpit. Chewie was following.
What about Salas?
Han asked. I don't care. We've got to find him before we go. There isn't time, Davis said. I'm not leaving him here.
Hey, no, Boo. We'll get you killed.
I don't care. Look for him, Chewie. But Chewie wasn't responding. Davis, find Chewie. Nothing. Han's hands were on the controls. Through the cockpit, he could see smugglers heading toward his ship. I don't like this, guys. Guys? He turned. No one was behind him. He left the Falcon, powering up, and went into the corridor. There, the glottalfib, Isner, held Chewie and Davis at blaster point. Beside them, hog-tied on the floor, was Selos. He had said the Sulliston equivalent of, "It's not my fault." Leia hurried down the hall to the ballroom. Mido, the first and only senator from Adin, an imperial stronghold, had called a meeting of the Inner Council. He had been elected to the council by an overwhelming majority of senators, and Leia had doubts about whether the election was fair. Two other former imperials had also been elected to fill vacancies left by the bombing. Mido was within his rights. Any Inner Council member could call a meeting, but junior members usually knew better than to take such authority upon themselves. Leia skated around a corner and arrived at the ballroom. The doors were closed. She was late. Mido had notified her last and made it impossible for her to be on time. That had thrown her off balance. She waited until she caught her breath, then shoved open the doors. Leia took her chair regally and looked calmly at Mido.
Since you have called this meeting, Senator, I think we can dispense with the preliminaries and find out what it is that you consider so urgent.
Mido clasped his two-fingered hands before him on the table.
The initial results of our independent investigation are in.
So soon?
Seagoss asked. She was petite, even for a Goshambling. They were delicate furred creatures, intelligent and soft-spoken. Leia had to lean forward to hear her.
Our people are still sorting the rubble.
Mido leaned forward, his narrow gaze on Leia.
President, where is your husband?
Leia frowned. He and Chewbacca are following a lead on the bombing.
But where are they, President?
She wouldn't be able to dodge this, much as she wanted to. They went to Smuggler's Run.
Smuggler's Run?
The edges of Mido's mouth curved upward. This is not a meeting about Han, Leia said.
I'm afraid it is, President. General Solo is behind the bombing of the Senate Hall.
Leia slammed her palms on the table as she stood. Are you suggesting my husband was trying to kill me? Senator No grabbed at her sleeve, urging restraint. She shook him off. The room was deadly quiet. Mido said calmly,
You weren't seriously injured, President.
And neither were you, Mido.
The bulk of the blast hit the seats, not the floor. If he knew you'd be there...
I'd be quiet now,
No said.
General Solo is well respected. He has jeopardized his life for the New Republic many times.
Mido looked up at Leia, his eyes pale.
I'm sorry, President. Truly I am.
He then passed out several copies of a single sheet of paper.
My people intercepted this message. You can verify its authenticity through your own systems.
Leia took the paper. Her hand was shaking. It was the message Lando had found on Yaril's ship. Mido explained the source of the message.
This is suspicious,
said Rayat Kom, the junior senator from Exodine. His voice was filtered through his six sets of teeth.
I would suggest that we put out a notification for Solo's arrest.
We can't do that, Seagoth said. He's a hero.
He's a traitor,
Mido said. Han had nothing to do with this, Leia snapped. No, leaned toward her.
Leia, I think you need to absent yourself from this discussion. None of us can be objective about the ones we love, no matter how hard we try.
As the Lady Luck docked at Skip 1, Lando scanned the bay for the Millennium Falcon. Nothing. Blast Solo. It would be like him to be gone by the time Lando decided to do the heroic thing. When the ship stabilized, he went to the cargo door and opened it. Sinewy Anna Blue stood outside, one hand on her slender hip. That cargo list was one of the most embarrassing I've ever seen. It's clear you haven't been doing much with yourself since you left here. He grinned. He had never been able to resist Blue. Sorry, I don't have time for chit-chat, Blue. I need to fix this baby and get off this mud ball before Nandreessen discovers I'm here. It's probably too late. Nandreessen keeps track of all the traffic around the run. You'd better hope he's busy with something else. You here to be with your old buddy Solo? He had to play this cool. I'm here because the luck's down. Why are you asking about Han? Because he and that furball of a partner of his showed up a few days back. Figured you wouldn't be far behind. Lando ducked under the partially open door and stopped. Gina Feet and the kid were standing there, blasters trained on him. He raised an eyebrow. Now, you folks sure know how to make an old friend feel welcome. Gina Feet spoke first.
You're not a friend, Calrissian. You're here to spy on us.
I just want to get the luck fixed. Lando's excuse was beginning to sound lame even to him. Jean blocked the edge of the ramp.
You're not going anywhere, Calrissian. You're wanted by Nandreessen, and we don't need his people here.
Too late.
A voice Lando hadn't heard before spoke up. A slender, whip-like wreck stepped out from the crowd. In his rope-thin hands, he held a blaster.
You're coming with us, Calrissian. Nandreessen will be happy to see you. About 2 million credits worth.
It amazed Queller how quickly the credits disappeared. He sat at his desk on Almania. The curtains were open, revealing the lights of the city below. The towers of the Jehar were black blotches against the night skyline. Emptiness. Ruins. A sign of Queller's tremendous power. But wealth supported power. He would have to strip Padir of all its treasures and sell them on the open market. His agents were already sending out discreet feelers to the greatest collectors in the galaxy. A chime rang on his private line. He touched the screen in response. Brachus's face appeared. His blonde hair was tousled and his eyes looked tormented. He had faced Skywalker then. Queller knew the signs. So, Queller said, Skywalker raised questions in your tortured soul. Is he your master now, Brachus?
No.
Brachus actually backed away from the screen. His mouth was a thin line, his eyes full of terror and sadness.
I want out this time, Queller. I'm done.
Queller let his death mask smile, even though his own irritation was deep.
What did Skywalker do to you?
Nothing.
Then why this sudden loss of faith?
Brachus raised his chin.
He says I could go back to the Academy. He says I could abandon the dark side.
I think Skywalker could have taken you back if he truly wanted to. But he did not. He's not interested in you. You are nothing to him. You aren't even worth killing.
Brachus flinched.
You sent him to me, didn't you?
I warned him away from you.
Brachus's eyes widened even as the words left his mouth. He apparently hadn't planned on telling Queller that.
Good. Skywalker is more apt to come to me now. You did well, Brachus.
Then I can stay here?
Brachus stammered like a child. He loved the factory. It gave him a peace that Queller found very useful.
Is that what you want?
Queller asked. Brachus nodded.
Then of course you can stay, Brachus. You have served me well.
And you won't send anyone else here?
Queller smiled.
No one else needs to come. Tilty is yours, Brachus. I will continue to subsidize it for you, and you will continue to work for me, as you always have. Your force talents will go to waste, but that will be your loss, Brachus, not mine. Your usefulness is done.
And Skywalker?
Brachus couldn't seem to let it alone.
Skywalker is mine now.
The glottal fib smiled at Han. Smoke seeped between his long yellow teeth, narrowly missing the walls of the Falcon.
Well, General Solo, we meet again.
Han had to struggle to recall its name.
You're outnumbered, Eisner.
I don't think I'm outnumbered. One deep burst of flame and your friends here will be of no use to you. And while I fry them, I can turn my blaster on you. Imagine a hero of the rebellion forgetting his blaster.
Han cursed. His blaster was in the cockpit.
Such language, General Solo. And when I am here on a courtesy visit...
Han kept his gaze on Eisner. He had to buy time. He just needed a moment to think up a plan.
What does Nandreessen want with me?
Eisner breathed out slightly. Licks of flame caressed the gray scales near his nostrils.
He doesn't want you, precisely. He believes he can help the New Republic.
Chewbacca, standing with his arms raised, slowly unsheathed his claws. Their tips touched the low ceiling.
Oh, he does he?
Eisner nodded.
He has information that your people might find of value.
Chewie inserted one claw between the wall and the door to a secret cargo hatch.
What kind of information?
Han asked.
Now, General Solo, if I knew that, I would tell you.
Chewie had inserted another claw.
And I told you before that I'll meet Nandreessen on skip one.
Chewie had inserted two more claws into the area.
Han nodded, and Chewie tugged with all his Wookiee strength.
Eisner looked up.
The door fell on him.
Flame blew out of his mouth.
Chewie dodged to the left, Davis to the right, and Selos, bound and helpless, cringed as the flame scorched the wall and then the top of his head. Chewie stepped on top of the cargo door, crushing Eisner. Then he reached down and pulled Selos against him, extinguishing the Celestan's burns against his furry chest. The flames diminished and then went out. Han leaned down and took the blaster out of Eisner's motionless hand. Get off him, Chewie. Take Selos to the storage lockers and see if you can find the medical kit. Eisner crawled out from under the cargo door. His gray scales were flaking off his back. He looked weak and dizzy. Tell me what Nandreessen wants with me, Han said.
The truth. Eisner leaned against the wall.
He wanted to use you to get to Calrissian. He figured if you were here, Calrissian wasn't far behind.
Sometimes Nandreessen lives in the past. Lando and I are rarely in the same place at the same time.
More scales flaked off Eisner's skin.
I need a water bath.
One more question, and then you can go. Who's behind all the credits that have come into the run?
You won't believe it, Solo.
Try me. Eisner opened his long mouth. A blaster bolt hit him in the throat, and he fell back dead.
Davis was standing in the hall holding his blaster.
What the hell were you doing?
Han asked. He was going to kill you. You'd have been fried consort if I hadn't stepped in.
Or maybe I'd have been just a little bit wiser. Mighty convenient of you to kill him at that moment. Who are you working for, Davis?
Myself, Solo.
Right. So what are you doing here?
Davis swallowed. A buddy of mine was killed on skip 5. I'm trying to find out why.
Nice try. Try again.
Davis shook his head. I'm being straight with you, Solo. And when I heard that you were here to investigate a buddy's death, then I thought maybe...
I'm not here investigating anybody's death. I'm here because Yadril asked me to come.
And where is he?
Han looked over his shoulder. Selos's round head had bandages wrapped loosely around it. Chewie stood behind him.
See? Davis said. Even your Celestan friend says Yadril's dead. And he should know.
He doesn't know. He's working on supposition, just like the rest of us. Which reminds me, Selos, how did Eisner get into the Falcon?
Selos repeated that it wasn't his fault.
Sure, Han said. A glottal fib just happened to follow you in.
This partnership isn't working out, Silas.
It's not.
When we get to Skip One, you're going to the infirmary, and I'm getting out of here.
Let's not be so quick to decide that, Davis said. I need a ship. I want to hire yours.
Han smiled. I haven't hired the Falcon out in years, kid. I'm not about to do it now. And you could find a less conspicuous ship.
I want the Falcon. I need the New Republic support behind me if I'm going to take you to the supplier.
Han studied him for a moment. Davis was young, but he'd clearly been around. And he was lying. Han could feel it. No. Now take your glottalfib and get off my ship.
He's not my glottalfib.
He is now. Door prize. Take him and get out. Davis opened his mouth as Chewie roared. Davis hurried toward Han.
All right, I'll get off. But if you change your mind...
I won't. Lando walked among seven wrecks. Instead of tying him, they wrapped their whip-like arms around his. Their skin felt like lukewarm rubber, yet he could feel the life pulsing through them. They rounded a corner into a closed chamber filled with water. Chairs were carved into the rock walls, which were covered with flies the size of Lando's thumb. Nandreessen sat at the far end of the pool. Algae covered his scaly body.
Carithian, you look prosperous.
I look like I'm wrapped in rubber vines, Lando said. Bravado at all costs. Nandreessen didn't need to know that his heart was pounding double time.
Ah, yes. My faithful Rex.
Nandreessen nodded at them.
Toss Calrissian in the drink and go back to your ship. Your credits will be waiting for you.
No,
Lando started, but the word wasn't completely out of his mouth before he found himself airborne. The water was hot and slimy and tasted of doughy bread. Lando sank quickly, scraping against the moss-covered rocks and feeling the heat grow the deeper he went. A bubble rose past him, and he realized with sudden fear that this pond was fueled by an underwater heat source, one that he was sliding into. Lando flapped his arms and got caught in his cape. Panic will kill you, he thought. He looked around. His lungs burned with the need for air. The only stairs were near the door on the far side of the pool past the guards. He turned and flutter-kicked toward them. A huge flame seared the water in front of him. Steam rose, blinding and burning him. He stopped.
Ah, Calrissian. You see the price of disobeying me.
Lando treaded water.
All right. Get me out of this pond, and we'll discuss the price of my freedom.
Flames curled out of Nandreessen's nostril.
The price of your freedom, Calrissian, is your death.
Lando's arms ached. He stopped moving them and kept himself afloat by moving his legs.
You're being a bit dramatic, Nandreessen. I was a young smuggler trying to prove my worth. I had no idea who I was stealing from. I've tried to pay you back over the years, but your goons wouldn't even take the message to you. I'm here now. Let's talk like reasonable people. I'll repay what I took from you, plus interest. You'll be making a considerable profit.
I'm not interested in profit. After you die, everything you own will become mine.
I don't think the New Republic would like that.
I don't think they will interfere.
Nandreessen sat on the slimy rock ledge, his big feet dangling in the water. He picked a fly off the nearby wall with one tiny hand.
They will be too busy fighting a new rebellion.
Lando began treading water with his hands again.
New rebellion?
Of course.
Nandreessen munched the fly thoughtfully.
Every government must deal with armed rebellion at some point in its career. For your friends on Coruscant, the rebellion will come sooner rather than later.
How would you know? You're nothing more than...
Flame shot into the water all around Lando, sending smoke and steam into the air. He coughed, then wiped his face with his hand.
If you're going to kill me, Nandreessen, just get it over with.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? But you will die slowly, Calrissian, and I will enjoy every moment of it. We'll see how long you survive in my world. Glottalfebs live in the water. We eat here, we sleep here, we mate here. Humans, as I understand it, cannot tolerate the water.
I can tolerate it just fine.
But for how long?
Cole Fardreamer had been peering into the panel of yet another X-Wing and looking at yet another Imperial detonating device when he'd been startled by a deep voice behind him.
So, the notification was right. We have a saboteur.
The guards had allowed him to climb out of the ship. He, in turn, had convinced them to contact General Antilles. Now, the general leaned over the X-Wing. He examined the computer. Cole couldn't see his hands, didn't know if the general was moving things he shouldn't be.
Be careful, sir, he said. Anything might set it off.
Thanks.
The general continued his investigation.
Then the door opened, and a protocol droid entered, its golden hands in the air. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
It was followed by a woman. She was small and thin, her hair flowing around her in a curtain. She wore ripped fatigue pants and a shirt that was too large for her. It took Cole a moment to recognize President Leia Organa Solo.
Leia,
General Antilles said. She looked at Cole.
You're the one who sabotaged this X-Wing?
He shook his head.
No, ma'am. R2 and I found the sabotage. R2 confirms the young man's tale, the protocol droid said. He is worried that these new computers are part of a plot to destroy the best pilots in the fleet. He suggests that we see who ordered the recommissioning.
I did, the general said. The chiefs of staff met. We'd had some problems with the X-Wings, mechanical troubles, mostly because they're not aging well. Since the market for electronic component parts has slowed down, we thought we could rebuild some X-Wings and then buy the others we needed.
The president's lips thinned and her eyes narrowed.
Mr. Fardreamer, how many X-Wings have the new computer system?
Well, most of them, ma'am. And not all the X-Wings are here with the fleet. A number of them are out. She swallowed.
Do you think these need a remote detonator?
Cole understood where she was going. If a remote detonator was needed to set the device off, then the X-Wings away from Coruscant were probably safe.
No, ma'am. This detonator is designed to go off when a certain combination of commands is made.
Do you know what that combination is? Cole shook his head.
Then every X-Wing pilot's in danger, the president said.
Alminia loomed in Luke's viewscreen, a large white and blue planet surrounded by clouds. Two of its three moons were green mixed with blue. He had spent the entire flight researching the planet. While Padir, one of the moons and the most famous both for its exclusiveness and its wealth, was neutral in the struggle between the Republic and the Empire, Almania considered itself loosely tied to the Rebellion and later to the New Republic. The Jehar, who had led Almania during the fight against the Empire, had sent weapons and funds to several rebel bases, including the one on Hoth. But the Jehar's leadership changed shortly after the New Republic defeated Grand Admiral Thrawn, and the communications from Almania stopped. Some reports told of hideous brutality under Almania's new regime, but no one asked for help until later, and by that time the New Republic was busy with the Yavetha threat. Almania, ignored in the best of times, was forgotten. As he got closer, Luke felt a distinct chill. He was nearing Padir. He opened a channel, expecting to be challenged, but his comm picked up nothing. No scrambled signal, no local broadcast, nothing. He scanned the land below. There were buildings, and he got a few life-form readings. There should have been millions. The chill gripped his heart. The cries had come from here, from Padir. He would have to investigate. Almania could wait a day. Then he felt the tendrils of a presence. And it had to be someone very powerful to be felt from so far away. A light flashed on the screen. He glanced at it, only to have it disappear. He frowned, wishing he had his old X-Wing, then returned his attention to the landing. precision landing of a kind he hadn't done in years. He pulled the joystick and felt the X-Wing shudder beneath him. The buildings were close on both sides. The X-Wing shuddered again and the computer locked. The screens went dark. Luke reached for the eject button only to find it was missing. He grabbed for the hatch. The ground spun close to him. He had barely opened the hatch when the X-Wing exploded.